After September 11th, Guantanamo Bay became the site of a prison for suspected terrorists who are being held for interrogation. There are currently about 700 detainees from 42 countries. Last month, the human rights group Amnesty International released its annual report, which described Guantanamo as a human rights scandal and called on the U.S. government to release or charge those held there. It's difficult to get access to Guantanamo and virtually impossible to talk with the detainees. Journalist Ted Conover visited Guantanamo and wrote about it in an article published last Sunday in the New York Times Magazine. He says that he wanted to see what kind of community had grown there and what it might say about America's attitude toward these prisoners of war. Conover is very familiar with American prisons. He spent a year as a guard at the maximum security prison Sing Sing and wrote about the experience in his book New Jack. I asked him to describe the cells in the Guantanamo prison, Camp Delta.
They have been fashioned out of those shipping containers that you see on the backs of trucks and on the big container ships, those elongated metal boxes. Apparently they cut out the sides, they replaced them with mesh, they put doors in, a window to the outside, they put a roof overhead, the sort of squatting toilet that they say is more customary on the other side of the world, and a bunk bed. So you end up with quite a small cell, 6 feet 8 inches wide and by 8 feet wide. So that is smaller than any cell, for example, in Sing Sing prison that I where I worked. And the way that the detainees are held there is quite severe. It's stricter than even a prisoner in the United States, say, who'd killed another prisoner and was being punished. They still get let out every day for exercise. That's required by law, I think, everywhere. But because Guantanamo is not U.S. territory, and these detainees have not been designated POWs, we don't have to treat them any particular way, I guess. And so when I was there, they were let out twice a week for 15 minutes each in a big cage by themselves with a soccer ball. Since then, I think the minimum has come up to 3 exercise periods of 20 minutes. But that's a long time to be in a very small cage.
You say that Camp Delta seems to be modeled on the Supermax prison of the United States, the Supermax approach to solitary confinement. What's the comparison?
Well, you know, until 25 years ago, there weren't whole prisons devoted to solitary confinement. There might be a part of a prison that had just a few cells for inmates who'd misbehaved, you know, who couldn't obey the rules, who hurt the guards or hurt other prisoners. But then, even there, you know, they're usually let out to exercise in a group. In the last 25 years, basically starting with the prison in Marion, Illinois, there's been this model of an entire prison of people who don't come out. Often they have their own exercise cage attached to their cell, and they're let into that for a few minutes every day. Their meals are delivered to them, and that's it. There's almost 1,000 cells now at Guantanamo. 700 are filled. But these cells seem to be based on that model of a prison. And it's a very restrictive model. I was told it's restrictive because these are extremely dangerous people.
You say that the military is bending over backwards to respect the Muslim religious practices of the people at Camp Delta. What is the military doing?
They have set up a public address system that you can hear throughout the camp, over which they broadcast a call to prayer 5 times a day. They provide every detainee with a Quran, a prayer book, oil, a kufi, the skull cap, a prayer mat, beads. When Ramadan comes around, they change the menu. They do work hard to accommodate religious practice to a degree. I mean, the thing you notice is that Muslims always pray together, you know, feet touching and next to each other. And so that's impossible given this particular setup.
Is the military being so careful about helping the prisoners observe Islamic customs because they made a mistake early on? Did they feel like they missed the boat early on in terms of religious practices?
I don't know. You know, I've thought a lot about this. They also tout the health care, which they told me several times is better than the prisoners have received in their entire lives. And they told me that on average they'd each gain 13 pounds. So they are very interested in letting the world know that the religious practice and the health care are really good. But I think the reason is that we have not designated them POWs, so we are not offering them a whole range of things that the Geneva Convention, the Third Geneva Convention, provides for prisoners of war.
Since the prison camps in Guantanamo are regulated neither by the Geneva Conventions nor American prison regulations, are there any regulations surrounding these prisons?
Well, we were assured several times by General Miller, who runs the Joint Task Force that runs this operation, that we were doing nothing down there that Americans wouldn't be proud of. But he won't get more specific than that. So that's not a lot to go on. And I'm afraid that some of the first signs that we've had for seeing how it's going haven't been encouraging. I was told by Captain Albert Shimkus, who runs the medical care at Camp Delta, that no detainee had ever been forcibly injected. He told me about vaccinations, and he said eventually everyone was persuaded that a vaccination was in their best interest. They didn't have to do anything forcible, and they never had with injections. Well, then, a couple weeks ago, some New York Times reporters finally tracked down some of the detainees that had been released. They were found in Afghanistan. One of them had been one of the 28 suicide attempts so far by somewhere around 20 individuals that they've registered at Camp Delta. He said that after his second or third one, they gave him a shot that left him unable to control his head or jaw muscles for many days and unable to feed himself. Now, maybe he's lying. Maybe he wants to make the American military look bad because he doesn't like us to begin with. But it was quite a specific kind of charge and a specific kind of complaint. And, you know, it gives you pause.
Did he say that that he was given the shot against his will?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your article in the New York Times, you said that although the Geneva Conventions don't apply to these prisoners, and these prisoners are not being seen as prisoners of war by the United States, the Geneva Conventions were cited to you in explaining why the press can't have access to the prisoners.
Exactly. It's a little funny. I couldn't understand a good reason why I couldn't just see a prisoner or say hello or ask a few questions. And they cited the Geneva Conventions article, which says the detaining power shall not subject prisoners to insult or ridicule. That was the reason I couldn't see them, which struck me as a little bit odd.
There's a special mental health unit that was recently opened in Guantanamo. It was opened just shortly before you arrived there. Why was it opened, and what is it doing?
Well, you know, last year there were 10 suicide attempts among the detainees. And then in just the first 3 months of this year, there were 14 more, bringing the total to 24. It's now up to 28. And, you know, the military said this wasn't a response to the spate of suicide attempts in the first 3 months of the year. But it just seems a little bit unlikely. The rate of suicides was picking up at this incredible pace, and since they opened the mental health center, it has slowed way down. There have been just a handful. So they're trying hard to keep this problem from growing. The detainees they've caught up with in Afghanistan said, well, the problem was how small the cells were and that we didn't know how long we'd be there. And this struck a chord from my time at Sing Sing. I think you can imagine that a prisoner places a great deal of importance on the length of a sentence. or the amount of months or years until a parole hearing, or if they commit an infraction, how many weeks are they going to be in solitary confinement? You know, as I wrote, knowing there's a light at the end of the tunnel makes being in the tunnel more bearable. And by not giving these prisoners any information about how long they're there for or under what circumstances they might be released, I think we've created a quite a large amount of anxiety among them, which leads to attempts at suicide. Now, am I a sympathizer? Am I a, you know, do I think they don't deserve the worst we can give them? I believe the military that these are bad people. We need to deal with them. But as an American, I like to think we will deal with them in a humane way. And I don't think slowly driving 700 people crazy is something I want my government to be doing.
My guest is journalist Ted Conover. We'll talk more about Guantanamo after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Ted Conover, and he wrote a recent article in the New York Times Sunday Magazine about the prison camps in Guantanamo in which suspected terrorists and jihadists are being held. He's also the author of a book that was published in 2000 about his year as a prison guard at Sing Sing, a maximum security prison north of New York City. Well, you were a guard in the year that you worked at Sing Sing, and one of the things that you did in Guantanamo is spend some time in the soldiers' camp, the soldiers who are guards at the prison camp for the terrorists. What are their living conditions like?
Well, they're better than the prisoners, but not by a lot. They live right next door on the same sort of barren piece of coastline that the camp is situated on. Most of them are reservists from the mainland. They were sent there for 6 months in most cases, but when I arrived, many had just found out they'd been extended for another 6 months. So they don't know how long they're going to be there either. They come from military police companies, either National Guard or regular military reserve. At least half of them work law enforcement in their other lives, with a lot of those working corrections. So a lot of them know about working in prisons and dealing with difficult people. But several of them told me that this is a particularly hard job because, you know, they start with a feeling that everybody in there hates my guts and would like me dead, which is not the typical situation if you work in a prison. You know, you can usually arrive at a point of some joking back and forth with certain prisoners who aren't too difficult. And you get to know them. You call each other by name, I think, in most prisons after a while. That doesn't describe Guantanamo. There's not a lot of sort of on-the-job you know, casualness. It's extremely serious, as I suppose it needs to be, given the way it's being run. But the language barrier keeps people from really speaking to each other. If there's a disagreement, the guards have to call a translator to come help out. There are women guards as well as men, just like in the States. And one of them told me, no, things are not always calm in there. She said, I've had everything thrown on me that a man could throw, which means body fluids. And, you know, that's typical of an American maximum security prison, too. But at least in American maximum security prison, the guards, you know, they work an eight-hour shift. They go home to their families. They have another life. And people in the military work really long hours. They wouldn't tell me exactly how many a week, but I got the feeling 60, 70, 80 hours on the job was not unusual. And I think it takes a toll. I think this is a very hard posting.
You mentioned that in American prisons, after a while, the guards and the prisoners, or at least some of them, call each other by name, that there's some sense of communication. Some of the guards in Guantanamo told you that they actually covered their own names on their uniforms. Were they afraid to have the prisoners see their names?
I think so. You know, when I worked at Sing Sing, we only let them know our last names. But at Guantanamo, they don't even want them to know that, because I think, let's say you have a distinctive last name and you anger a person who has some political clout in a country that doesn't like us, I think the soldiers are, you know, perhaps reasonably concerned that that person could bear a grudge and remember you and come and get you someday. Anyway, that's why they cover them, is out of that kind of fear, that kind of concern. When they leave the camp at night, they tear these pieces of tape off of their names sewn onto their uniforms and put them under the bills of their cap.
Did the soldiers consider this a difficult posting, or do any of them consider this a good assignment?
There is a sense of duty to one's country and of performing a service that a lot of these soldiers have that, say, a typical corrections officer would not have. You know, you don't have much of a sense of mission working in an American prison after a while. It's kind of discouraging. But the military, you know, they do a lot to try to boost morale and keep people feeling that this is part of an effort for our country, that this is an act of patriotism and loyalty. And there's a when soldiers pass each other at a checkpoint there, one will salute and say, "Honor bound," and the other replies, "To defend freedom." This is an esprit de corps kind of slogan to keep them mindful of the fact they're doing this for their country. But, you know, it's said so fast almost, you can't even tell what people are saying. I kept thinking it was a secret password of some sort. And it's a little peculiar to see the slogan on the gate of a prison camp, or at least it was to me. And I asked my first lieutenant escort if it wasn't odd to see a slogan about freedom on the gate of a prison camp, and he said, "Doesn't seem strange to me. Does it look strange to you?"
Well, I guess from his point of view, I mean, it's not the freedom of the prisoners being protected, it's the freedom of
precisely
the Americans. Yeah.
And I was told more than once, freedom ain't free, right? We pay a price to keep our country free, and that's the way they look at it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Ted Conover's article, In the Land of Guantanamo, was published in last Sunday's New York Times Magazine.